This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And here's something you might find alarming. Innocent until proven guilty. Now, I suspect you're quite familiar with this principle from the U.S. criminal justice system. It's a great idea for preventing the imprisonment of innocent people, but it's not such a great idea for preventing the contamination of your drinking water. That's right. As far as your water is concerned, a new chemical introduced into your aquifer, say a factory moves in, a storage facility, farmers switch to a new brand of fertilizer or pesticide that hasn't been tested, a mine or rock quarry goes into operation, the chemicals in that runoff are presumed not to be a problem in your water, by and large, unless there is evidence that it is toxic or causes health problems. And now that evidence, you would hope, comes from a lab and doctors and chemists, right? But under the current system, the first evidence of the presence of chemicals and their hazards might also be your own kids or yourself noticing a change in the quality of drinking water, getting sick, or worse, learning your family has been permanently contaminated in some way. The public health emergency in Flint, Michigan, you'll recall a switch to a new water source and government neglect left a population to complain of water that was unfit to drink and eventually was found with extremely high levels of lead and other chemicals for 18 months until something was done. That crisis has raised the question for everyone. How much do we really know about our water?
Hi, this is Salita from Girdwood, Alaska. My water flows into my tiny off-the-grid cabin through a hose in the creek that is filled from a pristine mountain stream that bubbles out about 100 feet from my door. I find it difficult to drink any other water, especially city water. In our small community, there is currently a vigorous debate occurring because the larger municipality has decided to reintroduce fluoride into the city water supply against the strong and vocal opposition of the entire community.
My name is Erin from Richmond, Virginia. Dominion Power just signed a bill to dump coal ash into the James River. I'm sickened and terrified for what could lie ahead if we do not act soon.
Pembroke Pines, Florida, the water is constantly yellow, despite the overwhelming chlorine taste and smell. Boiling it and various water filters don't work. Not long ago, we received a letter in the mail from the city saying our local water facility was aware 8 weeks prior that the fecal coliform and E. coli levels were not to health standards, but they chose not to notify residents. A 2009 New York Times investigation found that over 62 million Americans had been exposed to drinking water that did not meet some government health guideline. Another analysis in 2011 by the Environmental Working Group found that over 100 million people in 43 states were drinking water contaminated by trihalomethanes, a dangerous chemical that's the byproduct of chlorine. Is your water innocent until proven contaminated, or should it be the other way around? Before they can say something is safe to drink, municipalities have to prove or certify that the water is safe. Joining me now is Jeffrey Griffiths, a professor of public health at Tufts University and a former chair of the EPA's Drinking Water Committee Science Advisory Board. Professor, welcome.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Do you think that principle is basically what's going on with the drinking water supply, that chemicals are kind of innocent until proven guilty?
Unfortunately so. I think yes.
Now, one of the things that mystifies me here is that according to the EPA, Flint was required to use a chemical that would have prevented the lead and other chemicals and other metals from leaching from the old pipes in Flint, correct?
That's correct.
Now, what is that chemical, and how is that not a contaminant in and of itself?
Well, some chemicals are very small ones that are, in fact, ones that we even have in our bodies. And this is a phosphate corrosion inhibitor. And so phosphates are components of our own cells and of the natural universe in really high amounts. Phosphates could contribute to the growth of algae and things like that when used like as fertilizer. The amounts that we use in water to inhibit corrosion, they are, you know, safe. And these are small compounds that are not the kind of things that cause cancer or things like that.
But it is the case that, you know, it goes way beyond chlorine, the kinds of things that are in your water, and you may or may not know anything about them. And you say that that's fine. But in this innocent until proven guilty situation, you know, there are chemicals that can get in there that do cause problems. What do you most worry about?
Oh, I worry about the fact that we live kind of in a sea of small level chemical contaminants. The number of chemicals that are actually regulated within the United States are relatively small compared to the total number of chemicals that have been detected in water. And we don't really know what happens when you're exposed to very low levels of many hundreds of chemicals. If you live in a place where you're taking your drinking water from a river, which has seen a lot of industrial use upstream or a lot of farming activity, then you may have chemicals in the water that are present not at high levels, and in fact, trace levels of things where we don't even understand what the effects are. And the standards for drinking water treatment in the United States are not to remove all chemicals, but rather reduce the amount. Often there is not the assumption that you can actually remove it all. So that I really worry about the kind of the large spectrum of things that we're exposed to at low levels where we don't understand what the effects are.
So conceivably, someone worried about the Flint situation could take their water to a chemist and discover a whole range of surprises that relate to things that are happening around them that add to this chemical soup that you're talking about. And the chemist could say, yeah, you got a lot of this and this and this and this. And the person would say, is that a problem? The chemist would go, we don't know. Can you get rid of it? And the chemist would say, we don't know. And that's the situation we're in?
Well, it's a little bit better than that, but not much better than that. There are methods for removing chemicals in a broad way. And you could imagine things like running water through activated charcoal or through filters that are extremely stringent, very tight filters, where all that really gets through is the water molecules and not chemical compounds. And so those forms of treatment are not common in the United States because of the expense. If we were interested in removing all chemicals out of water and all heavy metals and all that kind of thing, then we would really have to change the standard treatment that most municipalities undergo.
Finally, before we go, if there's a standard that says there could be this amount of sort of rat poison or bacteria in the water, and that's the standard, but that suddenly we realize that actually it needs to be lower than that, what's the circumstance that determines that? Somebody has to get sick from it? I mean, we basically wait until somebody keels over?
Well, there's two ways that that happens. One is, just as you've described it, somebody keels over and then there's quote-unquote new information. And the other might be that, in fact, there's information from a laboratory where somebody is doing this and they go, oh, holy Toledo, you know, this is 100 times too much, or there's a new side effect that's found in some experiments and so forth. But I've got to say that for most compounds that are out there, we don't have the toxicology. So unfortunately, there have been a number of instances where people have gotten sick, and that's really changed the equation in terms of what we know is good or bad. Just to give you an example, lead used to be thought to be bad, and the acceptable amount was much higher than what the acceptable amount is now, because there was new information about damage to babies and brain development and things like that. And people said, oh, we've got to ratchet it down. And so that's happened. But, you know, the truth is there is no such thing as a safe amount of lead in water. There's no such thing as a safe amount of arsenic in water. But the removal of those is costly. And therefore, we have standards which allow trace amounts of those. There's obviously a very vigorous public health debate about whether or not those should be allowed at all.
If there are individuals listening to this program, and, you know, conspiracy theories often revolve around the water supply, lots of famous stories and movies about that. So one can be very paranoid about one's water for good reason, and they want to get those filters that you're talking about that are not necessarily commercially available but are really, really effective. Where would they go to investigate that?
Oh, there's lots of companies that make filters which will remove, as I said, heavy metals, and will remove the vast, vast majority of chemicals that are organic chemicals found in water. They are relatively expensive, and I think there are equity issues that arise because these are available to people with the wherewithal to do that. But most people don't have a couple of $1,000 or $3,000 or something like that to install such a system within their house. And one would hope that municipalities provide clean, safe water to everyone as part of the basic contract that we have with our cities and municipalities. There's another piece to this equation, which is also that when people have suggested such things, a lot of people within a community have said they don't want it because it costs too much. And they would ask then, what's the evidence that we need to get rid of those extra chemicals? And that's kind of a major problem. We don't have evidence in the same rigorous way that we have for a small number of chemicals for the larger group. Then it becomes hard to justify the extra expense, especially when we've just been through the Great Recession and things like that.
Innocent until proven guilty. That's the principle for the water. And we've already seen that disparity in what rich people are able to do and what the poor are stuck with in water in the Flint case.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
Jeffrey Griffiths is a professor of public health at Tufts University and former chair of the EPA's Drinking Water Committee Science Advisory Board. Thanks so much, Professor.
My pleasure.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.